what a delay in coronavirus relief means for the economy. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. At the start of the pandemic, there was political unity around economic relief. Politicians from both sides moved quickly to contain the damage. But several months into this crisis, that single-mindedness is dissipating. Senate Republicans did not unveil a trillion-dollar relief package, as had been expected yesterday. It's been delayed till next week. Turns out there's a lot of disagreement within the party on what a relief bill should look like, let alone the differences between Republicans and Democrats, who have their own $3 trillion relief bill in the House. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FHN Financial in New York and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Sherry.
How important is it that we get some kind of relief bill now, as in, you know, ASAP?
You know, if you think about the economy as an engine where each component, business investment, government spending, foreign trade, consumption, is a cylinder in that engine, right now we're firing on two cylinders. We have consumption and we have residential investment. Both of those come back to households. It is imperative that households have the wherewithal to keep the economy going, or we will have the dreaded double dip recession. And already, weekly data are starting to show that we're losing momentum. The New York Fed compiles an index of economic indicators, and for the first time last week, for the first time in 11 weeks, the index slid a bit. And if we want the economy to continue to grow, it's only going to happen if Congress continues to make households whole, ensures they have the spending power to carry the economy forward.
One of the sticking points here is what to do about this $600 of supplemental unemployment benefits. Some Republicans are concerned that it's too much. It might keep people from going back to work. I'm really curious to get your take as an economist. I mean, do you think it's too much?
Well, the $600 number was arrived at because that's how much money it takes to make the median income household whole if they're unemployed. And in fact, the pandemic layoffs hit lower income households much harder than higher income households. So the lost income is probably less than the median. And I don't think it would necessarily be a mistake to cut those benefits, maybe 500 or 450 a week. But to take them all the way down to zero, that would be an enormous mistake. 32 million people received unemployment benefits last week. That is just a remarkable number.
Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial in New York, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sabri.
Not that we aren't all used to movies on our phones and tablets in our living rooms by now, but the nation's two biggest movie theater chains, AMC and Regal, have delayed reopening for at least a few more weeks. And even that might be an optimistic timeline, as Hollywood studios are pushing back multiple movie releases themselves. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has more.
The pandemic has left the film industry without a clear plan forward. Countries are not reopening at the same time. And in the U.S., coronavirus cases are surging again. So business as usual of premiering big blockbusters globally to reduce piracy risk is not possible. Consequently, Hollywood studios are pushing back release dates for a number of major films, leaving struggling theater chains without the big draw content they need to reopen. Disney is indefinitely delaying its action-adventure Mulan. Paramount just moved two of its big upcoming films to next year, including Top Gun Maverick, a reboot of the Tom Cruise classic, and Christopher Nolan's sci-fi spy thriller Tenet, which was supposed to help movie theaters in the U.S. salvage their summer season, is now delayed without a new release date. Cinema chains point out that in some overseas markets, theaters are open, but without the Hollywood blockbusters to lure in audiences and keep their businesses afloat. AMC, the world's biggest chain, lost more than $2 billion in the quarter ending in June. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 143 points. That is 0.5%. The S&P is down 0.8%. The NASDAQ is down a full 2%. And the 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.59%. Today, China ordered the U.S. consulate in Chengdu to close. This was in response to the U.S. ordering China's consulate in Houston to close on Wednesday. Also this week, the U.S. indicted Chinese hackers allegedly working with the Chinese government on charges of industrial espionage, including trying to steal coronavirus research. All of this is to say tensions between two of the world's largest economies are high and escalating. So where is it all going? Ian Bremmer is president of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So between Chinese industrial espionage and U.S. attempts to lock out some of China's biggest tech companies, are we in what amounts to a tech cold war with China?
I think we are. And the U.S. government and Democrats as well in Congress, I would say, are both pretty aligned in wanting to ratchet up the tensions with the Chinese and do so globally. So I do think that we are now in a technology war between the world's two largest economies, and other countries around the world are going to be forced to make some uncomfortable decisions.
You have argued that U.S. efforts on that front have been the most successful foreign policy of the Trump administration. Why?
Because other countries are following the United States. As China has grown, as President Xi Jinping has said that China intends to be the world leader in AI, and as they use that to expand the power of their own authoritarian government, their surveillance capabilities, you see what's happening in Hong Kong with the new national security law, with the Uyghurs, with the incredible human rights abuses. A lot of countries around the world are concerned about this too. So, I mean, even though so many of Trump's foreign policies are unilateral and antagonize American allies, when you talk about technology in China, a number of countries around the world aligned with the United States on this issue.
Where do you see all this going, this escalation?
The next few months are going to be really dangerous. But I mean, unlike the Cold War with the Soviet Union, we still buy a lot of goods from China, and I think that'll still be true in 5 years' time. Our universities, our colleges make more money from Chinese students that pay full freight than any other students from around the world. I don't think that's suddenly going to go away. So there are entrenched economic interests with a lot of power in the United States that care about still doing business with China. But the potential for escalation to inadvertently really get dangerous is also real, especially in the run-up to the elections.
Where does the escalation of tensions between the U.S. and China leave U.S. tech firms?
I mean, you'd argue that it leaves them in a worse position in the sense that they won't have access to the world's largest data market, China, except that they mostly didn't have access to that market before. And if the World Wide Web is fracturing in two, if there's no longer a global data economy, and there isn't, then obviously Western corporations that were hoping to work in a global free market aren't going to have a global free market to play in.
Ian Bremmer is president of Eurasia Group. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.